When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some, I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding out, 5-hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
7 o'clock on the nose on a Tuesday, and you know what that means during football season. It's time to talk to our Odyssey NFL insider, Ross Tucker. Insider calls brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. May your game day be delicious. He is he's back from Hawaii. How was your Hawaiian vacation, Ross Tucker, calling football games?
If by vacation you mean landing Thursday night at 10:30,
yep,
meeting with both teams Friday,
yeah,
having dinner, and then after the game Saturday, flying from Honolulu to Phoenix, Phoenix to Philly, driving from Philly home. I think I traveled maybe 30 hours of the 50 some hours. I think I was actually like technically traveling. So I did see the ocean. I did see the beach. I didn't spend any time there, but for dinner, the play-by-play guy and his wife, they were overlooking the ocean. I was facing the other direction.
Oh, well, you know where you stand with the network. you're facing a wall, and they're facing out to
the
ocean.
You know what? He was there with his wife, and they deserved it. And you know what? So funny. Seth might appreciate this. In fact, when Seth and I met up recently, I probably said this. The seating facing the wall, I mean, facing the ocean was like you're in a booth.
Yeah.
I can't do that. That kills my back. I have to be in a chair so I can lean back ever so slightly for my back. So I am actually the one that jumped. I acted like I was being very chivalrous and accommodating, but really it was entirely selfish for my back.
Ah, gotcha.
That's good, too. As your play-by-play guy and his wife were there, kind of also, you know, having a nice little romantic vacation getaway, like a working vacation, too. Did you try to insert yourself into, you're like, hey, what are you guys doing? Are you going for horseback rides? Can I go?
I know.
I go and you end up riding on the same horse as your play-by-play partner. Did you ruin
well,
the romantic
so
getaway?
What's about that is I knew his wife was there, right?
Yeah.
So when we're at the meetings with the UNLV coaches in the hotel and the Hawaii coaches at their facility, I don't say anything about dinner that night because I know his wife's there. You know what I mean? Like, or his wife was coming or whatever.
Yeah.
So he said, you want to go dinner with us tonight? And I was like, are you sure, man? And he's like, yeah, why not? So I even asked my wife. I'm like, babe, should I just say no? Like, he's probably just asking me because he's trying to be nice because he knows I'm there by myself. I don't really want to be the third wheel. She's like, oh, I don't know. He asked you. So I literally text him. I'm like, I don't want to be the third wheel. He's like, you won't at all. I'm like, okay, cool. I'm in.
And it was good. And you guys had a good time.
And it was great. Yes. Good. They had a delicious IPA from Bend, Oregon. I may have had a couple of those. The food was good. I'll tell you what. Little known secret. People go to Hawaii for like the weather, which is amazing. They know food out there.
Yeah, it's good
like
food.
Like the chicken, I don't know how to describe the chicken, but it was good. They're big pork people, and so am I. It was delicious. Hawaii is, I said this on social media, at Ross Tucker NFL, Hawaii is good at food.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. They have luau's for a reason there, Ross. You know, they like to show that off, for sure.
I thought it was just for, like, the fire guy and the dancing girls and the ladies. I didn't know it was really for the food.
Oh, the Mai Tais and the pig. Absolutely. So, Ross, what did you think? Did you get a second gander at the Houston Texans on national TV this weekend? What did you think of what are your thoughts coming away from the Texans-Lions game on Sunday night?
Yeah, I mean, I got a lot, I guess. First of all, definitely the right decision to move Scruggs to left guard and put Patterson in at center.
Okay.
Definitely. That was much better. So that's a positive.
Mm-hmm.
The defense getting all those turnovers was a positive, although some of those I felt like were gifts from Goff.
Yeah.
Ultimately, I'm just a little bit concerned about C.J. Stroud.
Yeah.
You know, we had talked about earlier how, you know, it felt like he was beat down a little bit because the offensive line, the protection was so bad. But, like, you look at the interceptions he threw that were very costly in this game, the pocket was fine. I mean, he had plenty of time. There was no excuse for either one of those interceptions. And ultimately, everything that the game could have been if they won kind of was the opposite because they lost and the way they lost. Yeah. Now, who knows? You know, maybe they'll use this and say, hey, look, we can play with anybody. We can beat anybody. But I don't know. To have that kind of lead and then blow it in the manner they did, I guess in my mind, it makes me think, okay, they're not there yet. CJ's not there yet. They're not there yet. Where I really think that they have a chance when we get to January. I mean, yeah, I guess... I'm sure they'll still win the division. Mm-hmm. They might even win a playoff game. But do I think they're going to beat the Chiefs, Bills, Ravens, or even Steelers in the playoffs? No, I don't. And in fact, I'm not even sure they're better than the Chargers.
Mm-hmm.
So it went from me thinking earlier in the year that they were one of the four big-time teams in the AFC. I'm just not feeling that right now.
I get the one big thing, Ross, and I think maybe just because we don't want to make excuses or anything when you're trying to look at the team objectively, but the huge, huge detail is, okay, with Will Anderson and Nico Collins out there, and, you know, understanding the defense, for the most part, until the dam finally broke, was doing a great job in that game. What does just the mere presence of Nico Collins or Will Anderson make you feel any different about that if they both come back healthy?
You know what, Seth? It's a really good point. And yes, it does, because I think they probably win that game if they have both those guys, because I think they don't settle for the field goals they settled for, because Nico probably makes a play. And then defensively, you know, they probably make one more play on defense because of Will Anderson. I think that's a very, very fair point, especially with how well Danielle Hunter was playing against the backup left tackle for the Lions, Skipper. I think that's a good point. They probably win that game. And listen, those are two of their, what, five best players? I mean,
oh yeah,
like
yeah.
If you're that's a fair point that I wasn't thinking of. It's funny because I just went back and watched it, and I wasn't remembering. Oh yeah, Nico didn't play, and neither did Will Anderson. That probably those guys gives them a chance to be as good as the other teams we're talking about. Those guys probably make it so that, in my mind, at least. In the power rankings, they're probably right there with the Steelers, right ahead of the Chargers. I still don't put them there with the Chiefs, Bills, and Ravens. I'll tell you why. Late in the game, in a playoff game, I'm taking Mahomes, Josh Allen, and Lamar Jackson over CJ Stroud any day of the week right now. I just am, the way CJ looks. Whereas I think Stroud's probably on the same level as Herbert in that regard. And, you know, Russell Wilson's playing well as well. But, you know, there's other three guys who are like MVP candidates every year, which is why their teams are so good. And CJ's not playing like that this year.
Yeah, and that's why I try to wonder if I play the hypothetical game, I try to think, all right, well, look, Pat Mahomes, by the time Tyreek Hill left the Chiefs, Pat Mahomes was polished enough to withstand that, you know, and he was a bona fide true veteran quarterback. I wonder with guys like, well, Tua Tagovailoa, with or without Tyreek Hill, as a young quarterback, you see a big difference. And with CJ, I just wonder, all right, year two is a tough year, no matter how good a quarterback you are, to lose your best receiving option. And I'm trying to look through it through that lens. And I guess the big question, though, that we all still have is, all right, Andy Reid was a known, really good offensive coordinator already. Here, we don't know that about Bobby Slowick. And with or without Nico Collins, is Bobby Slowick actually the offensive coordinator who's best suited to really develop C.J. Stroud into being a genuine veteran NFL quarterback?
Well, and so what's interesting about that is the shine is coming off of Slowick a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
Whereas last year, it was like, he could do no wrong. This year, it's not gone as smoothly. And the thing is, and you guys know this, it's never one thing, right? Like, it's the offensive line. It's Nico Collins and Diggs being hurt. It's CJ regressing a little bit. It's the coordinator a little bit. Like, it's all of these things together where they're just not quite playing like they were a year ago. The good news is, though, I think we lose sight of the fact sometimes there's still a lot of football to be played. Mm-hmm. And you know, sometimes people don't want to hear this, but the reality is it's the teams that are playing the best those last couple weeks of December and then into January that are really, like, clicking. Those are the teams that end up going far in the playoffs. You know, the season, there's ups and downs for teams. There's roller coaster. I mean, the Eagles last year were 10-1. Every other team had at least three losses. Hurts was the leading vote-getter for the MVP, you know, or the odds or whatever. Next thing you know, they lose five of their last six. They lose in the first round of the playoffs on the road in Tampa, and the season's just over.
Yeah.
Right? And at this point, November 12th, everybody would have said, oh, Eagles are going to the Super Bowl again. So the Texans still have time as they get these guys back, as they now have, I think, their O-line reconfiguration solidified, and they get Nico back, and they just kind of got to figure out Slowick and Stroud how to get back into that rhythm that they were in a lot of the time last year.
Insider Calls brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. You can purchase Hellman's at your local Walmart, Kroger, or grocery store to add extra deliciousness and creamy flavor to your game day dishes this football season. So, Ross, looking ahead, we're talking to Ross Tucker, our Odyssey NFL insider. Ross, looking ahead, Texans now travel up to Dallas to take on the Cowboys on Monday Night Football, third straight primetime game. Cowboys are the talk of the league this morning. I'm looking up at our TV in the studio here. Everybody's talking about Micah Parsons and Mike McCarthy. What are the Texans getting on Monday with this version of the Cowboys? Are they cooked right now?
Yes, they absolutely are. I don't know how many of your listeners watched the Cowboys-Eagles game on Sunday, but that was ugly. I mean, they set some records for, like, yards per play in a negative way. They were averaging, like, 1.8 yards per play, which is really hard to do. Cooper Rush refuses to drive the ball down the field. It's dinking and dunking, and then the Eagles would just come up and kill whoever they were dinking and dunking into, and the Cowboys could do very little. They did get Micah back on defense. He was helpful, but ultimately it was not enough. That is a game that, before the season, probably why it was on Monday Night Football, that everybody would have thought, oh my gosh, wow, Texans, Cowboys, Battle of Texas, you know, two great teams. The Texans, I would say, catching a little bit of a break there to be able to play a Cowboys team without Dak Prescott that looks like they're kind of done.
Who should the Texans want to face? Should they want to face Cooper Rush more or Trey Lance?
It's a good question. So it depends on what type of it's like, what flavor do you like? What kind of ice cream do you like? Cooper yeah. Rush, not as likely to make big plays or to extend plays or any of that, but also not as likely to make mistakes. Trey Lance, to give the Cowboys some explosive plays, could make plays with his legs, but he also looks like he could have a Jared Goff. Like, I mean, Trey Lance, guys, had five interceptions in a preseason game this year.
Yeah, that was awesome.
I've never heard of that. Five interceptions in a preseason game? I mean, that's really hard to do.
Yeah. That makes me happy. That makes me want to see Trey Lance.
I know, it's Trey Lance.
This Texans defense has really rounded into being the opportunistic bunch we thought they were going to be.
Yes.
That sounds appealing to me. Yeah.
Yep, for sure. Our Odyssey NFL insider is Ross Tucker. Insider Calls brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. May your game day be delicious. Hey, Ross, before we cut you loose, where are you this weekend?
Ooh, I got a heck of a run coming up, fellas. So I got Thursday night, Commanders at the Eagles, Westwood One,
ooh,
national radio. I think you guys carry that. I'm not sure.
We do, yeah. Well, no, that'll be right here on Sports Radio 610. Hell yeah.
I love it. So Commanders, Eagles, Thursday night, then first flight Friday morning to Miami. I'll do the Raiders and the Dolphins on Sunday for CBS.
Nice.
Then, just because I'm a sicko and I have the football-loving disease, Tuesday night, I don't know my game yet, but I'm doing some action on CBS Sports Network. So when we talk next Tuesday, I will be in, I don't know, Central Michigan or Kent
yeah.
State or
Ypsilanti,
somewhere.
Yeah. Kalamazoo.
And then Sunday, I'll have a game in the booth for CBS. They did not announce it yet.
Oh.
So because I always wait for them to announce it first.
Yeah.
But I do know what my game is. And by next Tuesday, they will have announced it. And I will be very excited to tell you guys about it.
Okay. All right. Well, now I'm excited. That's a tease right there.
Excited about next.
Yeah, how about that?
That's a tease for next Tuesday's appearance. That is the great Ross Tucker. Hey, Ross, we appreciate the time, man. Safe travels, and we're really looking forward to next Tuesday. Have a good one, man.
Sounds great. Mayo, the rest of your show be delicious.
It will be. Thank you. We appreciate that. Ross Tucker joining us here for his weekly visit. Trey Lance is the correct answer to that question, by the way.
Yeah, the opportunity for turnovers, yes. I think, especially. Yeah. Now, Trey Lance performed well against the Texans the last time he faced the Texans, if I recall
correctly.
Yeah,
that was Kyle Shanahan was his coach then, I think, right?
Not Mike McCarthy, who doesn't, according to Micah Parsons, Mike McCarthy doesn't even work as hard as the players or put in the hours of the players.
Yeah.
That was the part that got me with Micah Parsons when he said that Mike McCarthy hasn't put in the hours that young men in their 20s have put in. Like, all right, okay, let's back off a little bit, Micah.
Yeah.
Yes, Mike McCarthy is just a little bit fluffed up more than he should be in terms of his reputation and everything, but he does put in the hours.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One of the first things Ross said to us there when we asked him about the game on Sunday, the very first thing that came to mind when we just kind of, you know, just said, hey, what, you know, I asked him, what'd you think of the game? What just general thoughts? First thing he brought up, he likes the Patterson Scruggs move. He thought that was successful. Yeah, what are your thoughts
on
that?
Yeah, it's tough because I think with Scruggs, two holding penalties really, really annoyed me, especially the one down on the 3-yard line that knocked them back out of the goal line territory.
Silly. Yeah,
there's a useless hold that wouldn't have affected the play. Even if DJ Reader had gotten in on the tackle a little bit, it still wasn't.
You can't go 10 yards backwards when your goal to go inside the 5.
Yeah.
For any reason.
That's the most punishing place you can take that penalty right there is down on the goal line.
Yep.
So it was better, and I think it wasn't as much of a black eye to where you just expect with Kenyon Green out there. There are times where you're like, okay, well, if he's left alone, it's a highway to the quarterback. So it was better. It's not ideal, but it was better. It was just not as good as if they had gone out and gotten an actual guard somewhere in the offseason, but there you go.
No.
One thing that bothered me a little bit, and I want to talk to John Harris about this a little bit more. You know, Harris and I disagree a little bit, and I'll defer to Harris because Harris is a scouting guru. He likes Patterson at center. He thinks he's a center more so than a guard. And I guess my question there is, all right, well, if that's the case, then why is it that that Patterson was the guy that went in when Kenyon Green went down, and then when Patterson got injured, they sent Kenyon out there instead of whomever would have been the actual guard? Who is their backup guard? Apparently, because Kendrick Green, they don't like or trust enough to be the backup guard.
Yeah.
Like, what did they do in the offseason to actually improve in that scenario other than hope that Kenyon Green delivers on his lofty promise as a prospect?
Yeah.
Three years hence.
Yeah, there was a lot of misplaced trust, I think, in Kenyon Green developing into a player. That's quite evident now, no doubt. So we got done talking about at the end of that conversation with Ross Tucker, talking about the Cowboys game coming up. Yeah, and he's laying that out. That's a good question. I think Cooper Rush is going to start, right? Like have they announced?
As of yesterday, I saw that they were discussing the options.
Okay,
but I don't know if they made an announcement.
Okay, I hadn't seen either. I mean, look, you should win this game regardless of which guy starts at quarterback if you're the Texans. But as Ross is laying that out, I'm like, oh no, we need the tasty delights of some interceptions from Trey
Lance. McCarthy said that Cooper Rush will remain the
okay. That's what I thought I had
forward.
Heard something. Okay, so it'll be Cooper Rush in that game. I think looking ahead here to this game, Seth, this game was supposed to have a lot more cachet than it did. Like, both these teams are less than, I think, what the networks and the people putting the schedule together thought they would be going into this game. You know, the Texans are, they're less than what people thought they would be, but they're still a playoff team. Like, yeah. The Cowboys, it's a disaster. Like, they were thought to be a playoff team, and now their quarterback is out for the season. Their head coach is on the hot seat. Their best player is making comments about the head coach that he says are being taken out of context. Like, it is a mess in Dallas right now. If D'Amico Ryans wants to fully get everybody in the fan base back on board, and I don't know that D'Amico cares about that, but I'm just talking about, like, if he were to care about it, and getting people, like, getting some of the, because he's hearing it. You know, he said the narrative. Remember last week he said there's this narrative that we're a bad football team. Like, yeah, that we're not a good football team. So they're hearing this stuff right now. I think it's unquestionably they're hearing it. You want this to go away as much as possible in the next week. You go up and destroy this wounded, dysfunctional animal that is the Dallas Cowboys. Mm-hmm. They are right. The Texans hardly ever play the Cowboys. And you're catching them at a perfect time to go into their house and waylay them. And here's the thing. Everybody that's gone into Dallas this year and gone into Jerry World has destroyed the Cowboys. They played four games at home this year. Okay, you ready for this? They played four games at home. They lost to New Orleans, who just fired their coach. They lost to New Orleans 44-19. They lost to Baltimore the following week. The final score was 28-25, but if you watch that game, the Ravens were destroying. The Cowboys scored like 20 points in the fourth quarter to make that game look closer than it really was. Then there was the Lions game where the Lions went in. I mean, that was really like the low point of the whole thing, like 47-9. The Lions go into Dallas and do the Cowboys. Same Lions the Texans fought down to the wire last weekend. And then last weekend, the game Ross was talking about, the Philadelphia Eagles going in there 34-6. So there is not, they haven't been competitive at home this year.
And there's a chance, and this is the thing. Okay, we all go into our coach mode or our player mode when we talk about not making excuses. And I will 100% say there's no excuse that you didn't have Nico Collins and you didn't have Will Anderson to collapse in the second half like you did. There's no excuse. Nico Collins not being on the field isn't an excuse for those two interceptions that CJ threw, because those were bad interceptions. But hey, good quarterbacks throw bad interceptions at times. I will say, in terms of how you feel about the rest of the season, Ross put it as simple as possible. Those star players matter. The Nico Collins has been, when healthy, the best player on the offense this year, including quarterback. Nico Collins has been the best player. Will Anderson has probably been the best player on the defense so far. Well, definitely in the month of October and since, right up until he got injured.
He was the best player in football on that side, yeah.
So you look at the second half of that game, or the last couple weeks where the Texans have collapsed in the second half. I'll be old school and say, hey, don't make excuses. But I also got to recognize, when I look at it objectively, star players get paid what they get paid for a reason, because they make a huge difference in games. So when you add back Nico Collins, when you add back Will Anderson, moving forward, I feel better. It's going to be a better football team if those guys can get healthy and stay healthy than they were in these last 2 weeks.
Yeah.
So the Cowboys game, if you have both those guys, then do what you should do to the Cowboys in Dallas, especially if there's like 20,000 Texans fans in the stadium and they can make the Cowboys go to a silent count in their own place. Then, by all means, do that. And then I feel a lot better when you start button up against the better teams you're going to face as well.
Do you think there's a chance Nico doesn't play against the Cowboys this week?
There's a chance, yes. Because we still got to see. So we've seen, now it's obvious that they're going to follow with Nico the same regimen they've done with other players, where when they're bringing him back, they bring him back to practice on a Friday. Yep. It's a very low-intensity practice on a Friday, not a lot of full-speed anything. And you get them kind of into the groove, and then they get a full week of practice the next week. So they're going to monitor Nico Collins all next week. If he has any little hint of a setback, they're going to put him on ice again, maybe for two more weeks.
Ah, he was dancing, Seth. He was dancing on Friday.
As I've told you time and time again, the threshold for how good a guy has to feel to dance is going to be different for a young man in his 20s than it is for
me and you.
I don't want to call you middle-aged or anything, but you're a little bit past your prime.
A little bit.
I don't want to call you middle-aged, but I'll say this. you're decades beyond back when you used to be anything impressive physically.
No, that's true.
But I don't want to insult you by calling you middle-aged. I'd say, like, you are on a steep decline in terms of where your peak was,
Sean. Just going to insult my dancing. Insulting my entire being. Oh, my God.
Yes,
yes. Oh, that's funny. Yeah, so they need to kill this Cowboys team on Monday.
Kill them. Crush them.
Yeah, yeah.
Ground them underfoot.
Yes.
Yes.
Got to. Got to.
Use them like a discarded cigarette butt.
That's
okay?
What I say. Yes. Let's see here. 5 Hour Energy fan line. 5 Hour Energy, the official energy shot of Sports Radio 610 and football super fans. This is an interesting question. How in depth is D'Amico with the offense? They seem to be plagued with complacency on offense, not only on the O-line either. Okay, I don't know that there's another position group. Maybe tight end is one, you know, that has the same blocking technique as the offensive line.
I give the tight ends credit for being willing blockers.
Yeah.
I feel like they're willing to throw themselves on a grenade. Yeah. Like they're not, but they, you know, they kind of they'll try to get in their way in the right place and be a speed bump.
Do you think that? Okay, the reason I think this is a good question is because if I were D'Amico and I were the CEO and the offense were performing or underperforming the way it is, like my gut reaction would be to throw myself more into the offense, right? Like that's what needs my attention right now. But D'Amico is the play caller for the defense. And I've had people suggest this, like, do you think there's a point where D'Amico turns play calling over to Matt Burke or in the future turn it over to some other defensive coordinator?
Yeah, and I think the other thing is that so much of this is starting to feel like a mirror image of Gary Kubiak in his early years, where he's an offensive-minded coach, but the defense is a mess.
Yep.
And you go through two different coordinators before finally you bring in a guy in Wade Phillips who's a veteran head coach who can basically be the head coach of the defense.
Yeah.
And Kubiak didn't have to necessarily change. You know, Kubiak ceded play calling to Kyle Shanahan and others over time, but he was still very much an offensive guy, and the defense was left to its own devices. Yeah, it's one of those two things, I think. It's either got to be D'Amico getting more involved in the offense and maybe even just being the red team more, where that's where you're kind of game planning against Bobby Slowick's offense.
Yeah, yeah.
That D'Amico's sitting down and saying, okay, well, this is how I would attack this game plan or what have you. Maybe more so of more time spent doing that than on the defense. Or you go out and you get a veteran offensive coordinator who can come in and just run the damn offense.
Yeah, dude, you know the irony of what you just said is that last part. You go out and get a veteran offensive coordinator. In the beginning of what you said, which is you compared D'Amico to Gary Kubiak, the irony in this is Gary Kubiak would be the perfect guy to bring in and be the Wade Phillips in this situation.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah, like, that's the irony. I don't think he's going to, obviously. Gary Kubiak seems very happy hanging out on his ranch or whatever. But
I remember Kubiak. I had a conversation with Kubiak about this a couple years ago. Where were we? Oh, it was at Andre Johnson's Hall of Fame, Houston Hall of Fame induction.
Okay.
And he was talking about when he first got to Minnesota, their analytics people, and this is when Minnesota was starting to be super analytics. And he sat down with the analytics people, and the analytics people told him all of his tendencies. And Kubiak was like, oh, gosh, I wish I'd had you guys earlier in my career. Like, and that's where with Bobby Slowick, I don't know, man. There's just way too many times when the defense, it looks like the defense called the play for Bobby Slowick.
Yeah.
They're like, they hijacked the play calling headset somehow and said, hey, this is what we want you to run. So, and then they're there waiting for the ball to arrive.
That's
like, they're
tough,
in
man.
The playbook for the offensive coordinator. That there's some things that, man, maybe it's as simple as just whether it's, if you're not going to replace Bobby Slowick in the offseason, if things don't turn around and we're still in this mess, you got to do something to change the way you're operating. There needs to be some kind of veteran guidance from an old head or something, because it's just not, if it remains this way and if CJ continues to play this way, it ain't working. And I don't know, I don't need, hey, we trust these guys and we have faith in them.
No.
And this is when people talk about accountability. Yeah, the players get rolled over every year. You know, players, you get 50% turnover every damn year.
Yep.
And there's no undying love and devotion to the players if they're not performing. You got to be that same way with the coaches.
Yes.
You got to be that same way with the offensive line coach. There's not, you can't just have undying love and devotion and commitment to the coaches if they're not getting the job done.
Yeah. I mean, this is the first like inkling of something to watch with D'Amico Ryans as a head coach. You know, like this is something potentially concerning, I guess, to keep an eye on. Like, is loyalty is a good thing. Over loyalty, like, are you overly loyal to guys, you know, and how fair is that to players and other, you know, other players and coaches on the team?
I don't think you're a genuine NFL head coach until you fire one of your friends.
I don't think that's an exaggeration.
I mean, that's a really, that's like when you, well, are you genuinely putting the team before all else?
That's a great observation. I want, because you know, a lot of these guys who are angling for their first head coaching job, the good ones at least, all have their list of guys that they would want to bring with them. Like, they're dreaming about their head coaching job, and these are all guys they've met along the way. You know, D'Amico's path is a little different from guys who were career coaches starting at, you know, lower level college and working their way up. But as they go on along that journey, they're, you know, if they're smart, they've got a note in their phone where they're just keeping a list of guys. This is what, this is, these are the five guys I would go to run my offense. These are the guys, boy, this guy would be great with linebacker, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, and then the vision kind of falls apart a little bit at times, you know?
It's, and, right, and that's, but again, if you're going to believe your own propaganda, which is always, you know, you put the team first, we're all, it's all about the team, the team, the team.
Yeah.
At some point, you have to make decisions where, it's totally about the team, and I might have felt, this is where the relationship between the head coach and the GM really, really matters, is when you need Nick Caserio to be the guy that can say, hey, we're here for each other to cover each other's blind spots.
Yes.
And, you know, GMs and a really good GM and head coach relationship, there's going to be disagreements. You're going to disagree. That's why you have two people. If you never, you know, like, if two people always agree, then one of them is unnecessary. That old saying. And that's where I think Caserio's ability to maybe detach emotion from things more so than with D'Amico, and GMs in general need to be more analytical about stuff. That's sometimes where the GM has to step in and say, listen, man, this is the way I see it, and I don't think this is getting the job done, and we got to move, even though it might be tough interpersonally or what have you, we got to move on from this guy.
Love to know if that's the case, like what the plan B is, you know, like what if they do, if they were to move on from Bobby Slowick, like what's, is it bump up Jerod Johnson to offensive coordinator?
Right, Jerod Johnson or Bill Lazor or Ben McDaniels. I think Jerod Johnson's the easy one that, hey, he's up and coming. He's taken interviews as an offensive coordinator.
And yet some of what may have gotten you into the situation you're in is this is a first time offensive coordinator that you've got, you know, as opposed to guys got a little more seasoning, you know,
who've seen some things. Like if you go with Jerod Johnson, you're going with another guy that's going to have some, there's going to be a learning curve, and you try to remember that with Bobby Slowick too. Okay. There's going to be a learning curve with him. The biggest thing with Slowick was I felt they seemed genuinely surprised that they were seeing as much cover two as they were earlier in the year. And it started to annoy me increasingly when I go, like, okay, maybe you should have anticipated that. Like, you were like, okay, I mean, Bobby himself said they were surprised by how much they were seeing. So, okay, what was your counterpunch to this thing that you didn't anticipate? If teams are showing all this cover two and everything, well, then damn, you better be able to run the ball or just have a steady diet of easy yardage over the middle or in the quick game. And they did none of that. That's the part that's frustrating. They just kind of kept banging their heads against the wall.
Yeah. Text message, 5 Hour Energy fan line. What are the odds the Cowboys fire McCarthy if the Texans embarrass them on Monday night? I think very low. Mike McCarthy may get fired. I don't think Jerry Jones is going to fire him on Tuesday if they lose, you know, 38-10 to the Texans at home. Maybe he will. I don't know. The more I talk about it, the more I'm kind of talking myself into it. For what it's worth, McCarthy is fourth on the odds board as of yesterday to be the next head coach fired. Doug Peterson still holding steady at number one, -125. So he's better than even, like, Doug Peterson is more than a 50% chance to be the next head coach fired. Matt Eberflus, Seth, man, I say some dumb things sometimes, but I say some smart things sometimes too. He was 25-1 last week, and I said, I think there's value in Eberflus. Eberflus is down to +150. He was +2,500 last week. He's down to +150 for next head coach to be fired. So there you go. And Brian Daboll is third on the list, who I think I think he's in your pack of four that we picked for our death pool at the beginning of the year. Our coach death pool. I think you're a Daboll guy.
Daboll's going to definitely be, well, I don't want to call him the sacrificial lamb. I've never been, the New York Giants offseason hard knocks might go down or might go be up there with the Falcons Hard Knocks and the Dolphins Hard Knocks as Hard Knocks that got people fired.
Yeah,
like you remember the Falcons Hard Knocks, you're watching it. Mike Smith was the head coach at the time, and you're like, oh, I do. This guy is not. I don't believe any of his motivational phrases.
Right.
They had a big. Remember, their big push was like they're going to be badass brawlers or something, and like Mike Smith's just not that guy.
Yeah.
Joe Philbin with the Dolphins, you're like, this guy is this guy my accountant or my head football
yeah
coach?
He seems nervous to cut people, you know.
Yeah.
Mike Smith should have changed his name to something a little more to pop,
something with
more
pizzazz
than Mike Smith. I think
you should have just given himself a nickname, you know, Bulldog Smith or something.
Get a
face
Bulldog
tattoo.
Bulldog Smith. Exactly, Mike Smith with a face tattoo. Payne and Pendergast with you on a Tuesday. Yeah, I don't think McCarthy gets fired. I hope the Texans embarrass them and we get to find out. That would be great. That would be great for the Texans to embarrass somebody this season. They've won six games and five of them we've had to sweat until the final seconds. You know,
yeah, have they embarrassed anybody yet?
The Patriots, they beat by 20, but I don't feel like the Patriots were in that game at halftime. Like
Yeah, it didn't feel like an outright bludgeoning.
No, and at the time the Patriots were the worst team in football. Now the Patriots are a plucky team that might get Matt Eberflus fired, but at the time it was like, okay, and it was Drake May's first start, remember? So I don't think anything happened in that game where Patriot fans were like, oh, okay, didn't see this coming. So yeah, let's embarrass them, but especially on national TV, you know, on Monday Night Football, you've had two straight primetime games where you've just completely wet the bed in the second half of the games. Let's play 60 minutes, Texans. Let's go and let's finish our blocks, okay? And let's not try to strip the ball from our quarterback. Was that the worst play in Texans history, the Titus Howard strip of CJ Stroud? Like when you combine him stopping blocking with him stripping his own quarterback.
It was like a butt fumble type of play.
Yeah.
Except the butt fumble, I'll give Sanchez a little bit of a break on the butt fumble. At least they were trying to do the right thing. It was just normal. It was physical incompetence, but it wasn't something that was so stupid that, oh, Sanchez was trying to run the ball or what have
you. Right.
The Rosenkopter, I would say the same thing. Sage at least was trying to do the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
It was a heroic effort at trying to do the right thing, just very poorly executed. It was magnificent in an aerial misfire, and yet
his intentions were good.
It wasn't as stupid as whatever the hell Titus Howard was trying to do on that play. And that wasn't even, if Titus was like, oh, you're right here, I'll take the ball from you, like if you're gonna give it to me, at least then, hey, who knows, maybe he would have rumbled for 5 yards or something. It would have been, but he stripped the quarterback.
CJ's trying to hold on to the ball,
and I watched the body language on the all 22. I couldn't tell on the TV copy. On the all 22, CJ gets up and starts kind of stalking over towards Titus.
Yeah.
And it didn't look, it gets dicey reading body language. It didn't look like he was trying to see if Titus was okay.
No.
It looked like, what the hell were you doing?
There were people lamenting that they cut away from that. Like the angle, you could tell on the TV copy that CJ was getting up to say something to Titus, and they cut to a different angle, and people are like, oh, no.
And nobody asked CJ about it in the post game. Hopefully they'll ask him about it on the Wednesday press conference.
Oh,
it
nice.
Was just one of the oddest things I've ever seen in any sport anywhere.
Strange. Text in 5-Hour Energy fan line. Where does that Titus play? Send in some other examples. I want to see that. To me, is the silliest play in the history of the Houston Texans.
Remember, CJ's the guy who's been saying we need guys to buy in to the system and everything. And I'm watching Titus Howard actively trying to rip the ball away from his own quarterback. I'm wondering how bought in Titus is. Like, this is where you're going to turn everything around, Titus.
It was so dumb.
Yeah.
Where exactly are the Texans among playoff contenders right now? Playoff tiers on ESPN. We got that coming up next.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, so the AFC playoff picture, as shaky as things feel right now for the Houston Texans, the fact of the matter is the AFC playoff picture, the Texans are firmly in the mix right now. There's four teams with a greater than 97% chance to make the postseason, I believe, on playoff status, Seth.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the Texans sitting there at 94%. to make the to make the postseason.
Yeah, I guess the Steelers are the team right now that you look at, and Russell Wilson is their quarterback, and they're 7-2 with Russell Wilson having the comeback that nobody wants to see, other than Russell Wilson's marketing team and Steelers fan.
Yeah.
Russell Wilson's still a very viable NFL quarterback.
Yeah, that's Mike Tomlin is kind of vindicated right now. He got a lot of criticism for making that move of taking I mean, they were 4-2 when they benched Justin Fields. And I get it. Justin Fields was not the main reason they were 4-2.
Yeah.
But the optics of Ben, it's not like he was benching him because he had, you know, vintage Ben Roethlisberger coming back from injured reserve or something.
Right. Yeah. But I think that there is, Justin Fields still is a chronically underdeveloped enough that Tomlin just could see what the limitations were with Justin Fields and desperately wanted to get a veteran who could get in there and operate the offense
for sure.
The right way. So he's not the ideal candidate. And he is a free agent at the end of the year, which puts the Steelers in another dicey situation. It's almost like, I don't know what you do with Russell Wilson if maybe you lose in the wild card round. Like, what are you going to get into a bidding war for Russell Wilson to come back and do that? But they're very much with a team that has a very good defense and offensive weaponry. We'll see how much Mike Williams can do for them. There's a lot of uncertainty there. I think the difference between the Steelers and the Texans is, all right, the quarterback should be a big advantage for the Texans.
Yeah.
They should be looking at it like, oh, yeah, well, the Steelers, they got Russell Wilson.
Right.
We've got C.J. freaking Stroud. But
yep.
C.J.'s not playing at peak C.J. Stroud caliber.
He's not. So right now, Texans' chances to make the playoffs, according to ESPN.com and their probability index, 94.8% chance to make the playoffs, 92.6% chance to win the AFC South, 7.6% chance to win the Super Bowl, which I'll be honest is a little higher than I thought it would be.
Well, okay. Yeah. I mean, we talked about this before. You know, you don't want to make excuses or anything, but the fact that you didn't have Will Anderson or Nico Collins in the second half of the last two football games. Will Anderson got injured early and tried to make a couple comebacks versus the Jets, but in the second half he wasn't there.
He was out of that game for all intents and purposes.
Right. And you look at the second half of last week's game, where everything really fell all apart, you don't have Nico Collins and Will Anderson out in the field, and it's to step back and just be objective about it, or if you're the odds makers or what have you, yeah, it's a better team when they've got their two best football players.
Yeah,
is it fair to say that if we had to power rank the Texans this year, Nico Collins and Will Anderson are at the top?
They're definitely the best players on each side of the football for this team.
Yeah.
You know
yeah.
what I mean? Like, that's their best offensive and best defensive player, in my opinion.
And so, yeah, you're not going to be as good without those guys.
Yeah.
And it doesn't make me feel any better about the second half collapse on Sunday Night Football. But, yeah, looking forward, and it does. If Nico Collins comes back and all of a sudden the offense is humming, I think people are still going to have reservations and questions about Bobby Slowick. But Nico Collins will make Bobby Slowick a better play caller.
Yeah,
And I say that tongue in cheek, obviously, but it's just a lot easier to be a really good play caller when you've got a weapon like Nico Collins out.
Yeah,
there.
It's you know, you take a look, Seth. You look at how the AFC is playing out, and look, the Texans might go on a run here. There's three very, very friendly games coming up here, I'll say. You know, like this,
yeah.
You should beat the Cowboys on Monday night. You're coming back, short week granted, but you're coming back to a Titans team that's not good, and you're playing them at home. And then you play the Jags in Jacksonville, and you might be going against Mac Jones in that game. So these, and then you get a bye week. So you got three games coming up where if the odds makers are correct, you should be 9-4. Now, they lost to the Jets, the Texans did. So I understand the warning label that comes with that. So they might go on a run here where they're more than just the four seed that won the AFC South. But if I had to bet right now, I think they're going to be the four seed, just like last season. Four seed, win the AFC South, and play the best of the three wild card teams in the first round of the playoffs, like they did Cleveland. You know, Cleveland had a better record than the Texans last year, but they played in the AFC North. Right now, it would line up to where the Texans would face, in all likelihood, one of the Steelers, the Ravens, or the Chargers at home. Things can change, obviously, but if we're playing the hypothetical game and we're looking ahead, like if the Texans had to play the playoffs next week and you had to play the Chargers, the Steelers, or the Ravens, which one would you most want to play?
Oh, boy. Oh.
I don't know if I want to face Jim Harbaugh in a playoff game, man.
And especially given the trajectory and everything else like that. I can't say the Ravens. I can't say the Ravens.
I but definitely can't Ravens, say the Ravens. Seth.
It's this year's Ravens. All right, I'm going to say the Steelers.
Yeah.
I'd be nervous about the Texans offense going up against that defense, but I'd feel really good about the Texans defense versus Russell Wilson in that offense, and there's chance for turnovers, so I'm going to say the Steelers.
I think the Ravens are a really bad matchup. The Ravens are not a good They're a bad matchup for almost anybody just cuz they have Derrick Henry and Lamar Jackson now. Like there's nobody they're a good matchup for, But the Ravens' Achilles heel this year is their defense, and I just don't know that the Texans can take advantage of that.
That's exactly right. This would be an ideal year if the offense was performing the way that you were dreaming of in the offseason. And the Texans' defense is better this year than they were last year. But, I mean, if there's one of the weaknesses for the Texans' defense has been some of these chunk run plays that they give up.
Yeah.
And we saw that the other night. I would call it a screen or a run. Man, in the second half, the Lions really just started to pile on with that. The Texans broke down in discipline on their run defense. It wasn't good. I think that the Ravens could really exploit that versus this Texans defense.
You know the one thing though about when we say Ravens, Steelers, or Chargers, if the Texans were to play them in the first round of the playoffs in a 4-5 matchup,
yeah,
a place would be a lot of Steeler fans in that NRG Stadium.
It's not
the best, like last year against Cleveland, that was a hell of a home field advantage when everybody's amped up to have playoff football back for the first time in 4 years. I'm just nervous if the Steeler fans will shell out that cheddar to come watch their squad play at NRG Stadium.
This is what I'll look to for people looking for, historical precedents or whatever or what have you. And, okay, can a team be different by the end of the year than where they are in the middle of the year when they have a young quarterback? I'll go back to weeks 5 through 8 of the 2019 Chiefs season where they had a young Pat Mahomes. They lost 3 of 4 games in a stretch where they lost to the Colts, the Texans, and the Packers. They beat the Broncos. But they went 1-3 in that stretch through late October. They went 2-4 when you include the next couple weeks through November 10th. So, and Mahomes was banged up.
Yeah.
Certainly wasn't, didn't quite look right.
What happened and that season?
By the end of the season, and I believe that was the year too where the Ravens looked like they would never be beat again, right? The Ravens looked
yes,
like a
that
team
was Lamar Jackson's,
through the season.
That was Lamar Jackson's MVP season.
Yeah,
yes.
Nobody will ever lose, and nobody will ever beat the Ravens again. They've broken football. Here you go.
Yep.
By the end of the year, they're a different team. And I think that's what you got to hope for with the Texans is they're going through this learning curve that they got to figure some things out, but it happens all the time. Yeah, teams change throughout the season.
Yep. All right, PettyCast. We do it every Tuesday. It's a Petty Tuesday. We get petty. We highlight the pettiness. Boy, there's a lot of Micah Parsons in this PettyCast.
Let's get petty.
You've been warned. We'll do that coming up next.